Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 2, Hiranyakashipu, King of the Demons, text number 48. Vitata vinivesho yam tat gunesh varta drigavachaha yitamanorata svapna sarvam andriyakam risha vitata vitata fruitless avinivesha the conception I am this yet which guneshu in the modes of material nature, artha, as a fact, drigavachaha, the seeing and talking of, yata, just as, monorataha, a mental concoction, daydream, svapna, a dream, sarvam, everything, andriyakam, produced by the senses, mrisha, false. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. It is fruitless to see and talk of the material modes of nature and the resultant so-called happiness and distress as if they were factual. When the mind wanders during the day, and a man begins to think himself extremely important, or when he dreams at night and sees a beautiful woman enjoying with him, these are merely false dreams. Similarly, the happiness and distress caused by the material senses should be understood to be meaningless. Purport. The happiness and distress derived from the activities of the material senses are not actual happiness and distress. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita speaks of happiness that is transcendental to the material conception of life. Sukham adyantikam yat tad buddhi rayam atindriha. When our senses are purified of material contamination, they become atindriya, transcendental senses. And when the transcendental senses are engaged in the service of the master of the senses, Rishikesha, one can derive real transcendental pleasure. Whatever distress or happiness we manufacture by mental concoction through the subtle mind has no reality, but is simply a mental concoction. One should therefore not imagine so-called happiness through mental concoction. Rather, the best course is to engage the mind in the service of the Lord, Rishikesha, and thus feel real blissful life. There is a Vedic statement, Apama soma amrita abhuma apsarobir viharama. With reference to such a conception, one wants to go to the heavenly planets to enjoy with the young girls there and drink soma rasa. Such imaginary pleasure, however, has no value. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 7.23, antavantara men of small intelligence worship the demigods, and their fruits are limited and temporary. Even if by fruit of activity or worship of the demigods, one is elevated to the higher planetary systems for sense enjoyment, his situation is condemned in Bhagavad Gita as antavat, perishable. The happiness one enjoys in this way is like the pleasure of embracing a young woman in a dream. Sometimes it may be pleasing, but actually the basic principle is false. The mental concoctions of happiness and distress in the material world are compared to dreams because of their falseness. All thoughts of obtaining happiness by using the material senses have a false background and therefore no meaning. It is fruitless to see and talk in the material modes of nature and the resultant so-called happiness and distress as if they were factual. When the and the mind wanders during the day, and a man begins to think himself extremely important, or when he dreams at night and sees a beautiful woman embracing, enjoying with him, these are merely false dreams. Similarly, the happiness and distress caused by the material senses should be understood to be meaningless. Now, I'm probably saying that the dreams we have, our imagination, our daily activities are meaningless. But it seems that people have find meaning in these things. So how can they be meaningless? Because everyone has a meaning, and the meaning is to enjoy. Everyone wants to enjoy, and enjoying with a young girl in the heavenly planets or in a dream is a kind of enjoyment. Therefore, there is some meaning to it. But when it's broken down to what actually it is, then it's not really achieving the goal, and therefore, although the goal is to become happy because it's temporary, therefore it's not really achieving happiness. Whereas Krishna says, nashti buddhya yuktasya, nachi yuktasya bhavanaha, nacha bhavyantak shantir, ashantasya kutak sukham. For one who is not in... They change the translation, so I only know the old one. For one who is not in transcendental consciousness or Krishna consciousness can have neither controlled mind nor steady intelligence, without which there is no possibility of peace, and how can there be any happiness without peace? So again, for one who is not in Krishna consciousness or transcendental consciousness can have neither controlled mind nor steady intelligence, without which there is no possibility of peace, and how can there be any happiness without peace? So why is it that only in Krishna consciousness can have one a controlled mind and steady intelligence? Why not by meditating on a candle? Doesn't our mind become controlled and our intelligence become steady? Well, you have the answer.
No, I'm sorry. About the mind is in the commentary.
What's that? Yes. Yeah, the question is, if we're meditating on a candle, doesn't our mind become controlled? But the question is what we're meditating on, the flickering candle. If the candle is always flickering, then our mind is flickering along with the candle. In other words, everything in the material world is temporary and ever-changing in ways that we cannot predict. And therefore, anything we meditate on in the material world will not help us control the mind, because the mind will become agitated with the ever-changing material world. If one meditates on Brahman, the mind can become controlled, but the intelligence is still impure. Ayurur krishena padam tabtam tada, yanye are rindaksha, vimukta maninas, tvat asta bhavara vishuddha buddhaya, aruya krishena param padam tada, pashantyana nadritam yushmarangrayaha, yanye aravindaksha. That if one is not meditating upon Aravindaksha, Krishna who has lotus-like eyes, then vimukta manimas, then one's intelligence, one may falsely imagine oneself to be liberated, but yanye aravindaksha vimukta manimas tvat asta bhavara vishuddha buddhaya, one's intelligence still remains covered. In other words, real intelligence is understand how everything and everyone is an expansion of Krishna. If one doesn't understand that, then one is not seeing things properly. That means one's intelligence is covered. And if the intelligence is covered, then Krishna says that, or actually Maharaj Shabdev says, that Nunam pramatta kurute vikarama yadendriya pritya aprinoti nasaru manye yat atmanoyam asannapi kleshida ashadeha paravastava devota jata yavana jignasita atmatadvam yavankriyastavadi dhammanovai karmatmaka yena sharira bandaha evamana karma prasam prayungte avidya ma upadiyamane pritirna yavan mai vasudeve namochite yoga namochante deha yoga natavat. So it's indeed nunam pramata, anyone who's absorbed in the temporary and performing vikarma or activities not prescribed by shastra, by ultimately by Krishna, then he's only going to wind up with klesha, with miseries and temporary situations. Therefore, paravastava devota jata. As long as one is not inquiring about what Krishna wants us to do, about atma-tattvam, as long as one is not seeking after the Absolute Truth, then he's said to be defeated by illusion. And as long as one is absorbed in illusion, then the mind will become unclear. And if the mind is unclear, then consciousness will be unclear. And if our consciousness is unclear, then we take one body after another. So as long as one is absorbed in these upadis, these false designations, and not attracted to loving Krishna, then there's no question of liberation. One will have to take birth in any one of the 8,400,000 species of life. So this idea that we're enjoying, but what are we enjoying? According to the scientists, the material world is 99.9% space. Only due to our interpretation of that space, according to light that's entering into our eyes, or through our other senses, that we imagine what's going on in the material world according to the modes of nature that we're situated. If you were saw a beautiful woman walking down the street, if someone or something saw a beautiful woman walking down the street, they'd see it according to their particular mode or their imagination. Mode of nature and imagination is the same thing because it's not real. It's not. When we see things in relationship to Krishna, when we see the soul and the super soul, that's real. Everything else is just, we're taking an image and we're constructing something out of it according to the modes of nature we're under. So if a man sees a beautiful woman down the street, then he may become lusty. But a brahmachari who's trained up may see her as death personified. And a dog may see her as his potential next meal. Same woman, but seen in different ways for different types of perspectives, different imaginations. Now a transcendentalist will see the same woman as Krishna's eternal servant in the body of a woman, just like a man, Krishna's eternal servant with Krishna, in the body of a man. But the important, the real thing is the Krishna who is eternal, and the soul who is eternal, and everything else is just more or less light, just like in a movie. There is so much just light being shown on a screen. And because the light being shown, they may spend sometimes $1 billion to get the light being shown on the screen. And people will spend money, substantial amount of money, not only for the entrance, but even more for the popcorn and everything else, just to go and see some light being projected on a screen. But is anything really happening? Is all that romance and destruction that's going on, that people are very addicted to, is that actually happening? Any more than when you have these animated cartoons going on. And what to speak of the imagination when people are playing video games. Have they really killed anyone in the dungeon? Did anyone really die? Are they afraid of getting arrested? They killed 20,000 demons in the dungeon today. Maybe someone will come and arrest them. A virtual policeman will come and arrest them. No, because they're not afraid because they know it wasn't real. It's just an imagination. But they're taking pleasure from their imagination. As a matter of fact, they're having contests and feeling proud. That I read somewhere that now in one of the big universities in America, they're offering credit in the school for learning to play some kind of thing about dungeons and demons, I think. Some kind of video game, Dungeons and Demons. You can get college credit for it. Because they recognize this is probably as valid in modern society as everything else that people are learning. Certainly it's probably more substantial than something like quantum mechanics, which even the people who have their PhDs don't even know what it's all about. So we may take everything as real. As a matter of fact, we've been trained systematically that our conceptions are actually valid. That we are these bodies, we have all these designations, and that the purpose of life is to work, get money, and then try to enjoy as much as possible through creating a family and getting a house. Or nowadays, it's not even that. Get enough money so you can sit at home and play video games. Or do even things which are more strange and in the mode of ignorance than that. Take as much intoxication as you can, experiment anyway in sex life, torture things if you can and get away with it. So as the mode of ignorance develops, their imagination goes completely wild into the mode of ignorance rather than passion. Instead of building buildings, they dream of dynamiting them, destroying them. Instead of trying to build relationships, they dream about torturing people for the fun of it, or animals. So, imagination can be there in any one of the three modes of nature, or the combination of them. But after all, because it's all related to this material conception of life and devoid of Krishna consciousness, that's all it is, imagination. But that imagination will bring us into different spheres of material existence. And therefore, once you try to understand what is the value of our material conceptions and what is the value of our spiritual conceptions, and then make decisions to either cultivate spiritual conceptions or material conceptions. That's our choice. So I'll stop there and thank you. Any questions? Comments?
Hare Krishna. I was asked sometimes by some devotees that if we give up all desires for the false, temporary, material things, we will be totally unmotivated and will do nothing. And there will be no inspiration in life.
Well, that's good. At least they won't get into trouble. It's like the Buddhists. People are doing all kinds of nonsense. So Buddha said, just sit in the corner. That way you won't be so disturbing. So that's a good beginning, yeah. What is the value of doing nonsense? Because we don't say you don't eat, we don't say you don't sleep, you don't have sex, you don't defend. You do it in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise it's nonsense. We don't say stop activity. But add Krishna to do it for Krishna. And if you don't want to do it for Krishna in some form or another, then better off not doing anything. You won't get into so much trouble. You won't get into trouble that way. Yes?
There are some people who say that we should learn to do things more as a game. And there's a variety of these people. Some people say that we can add some play to our life to get motivated to get healthy and do something productive. And someone may point out that Krishna does everything as a game, as a lila. So if Krishna does everything, and in the spiritual world they do everything as a game, as a lila, so why shouldn't we do something as a game here also?
Why shouldn't you do everything as a game? What kind of game?
Here?
Well, I mean, the whole, everything, as it says in the Krishna book, everyone is dancing with Krishna. The whole world is full of Krishna singing, but everyone is understanding it differently. Everyone's dancing with Krishna, but those who are dancing following Krishna, they're dancing in the spiritual energy. And those who are dancing, imitating Krishna, they're dancing with their illusory energy. So any game in the illusory energy is just an illusion. That kind of game, when you're a deer and the cheetah that is chasing after you, you can say, well, it's all a game. As he grabs your throat and bites it. Oh, it's just part of the game. So if you want to play that game, go ahead. But I don't think the deer is actually thinking it's fun and games. So you want to imagine you can have fun and games here, but you may have to get the consequences for your so-called fun and games. Your fun may be someone else's distress. Not everyone's going to want to play your game. Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.